It's Today Explained, World Cup edition. I'm Noel King. In the host country, Qatar, leaders made a promise some years back. Today's show is about whether it was kept. A frenzy of construction accompanies any World Cup. And after winning the right to host, Qatar vowed to reform a very old and very exploitative system that keeps foreign workers bonded to their employers, virtually without rights, including the right to say no. That's dangerous. That's unhealthy. That could kill me. And people died on World Cup construction sites. But no one, including us, can figure out how many, because Qatar's very secretive. Today, we're going to hear from two people who moved to Qatar for work. One, a Kenyan man who tried to scrape together a living there. And one, an American researcher with a PhD who was looking into this very question. Did Qatar keep its promise? That's coming up. Support for Today Explained comes from FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. If you like spy thrillers or indeed Elizabeth Moss, then you might want to check out FX's The Veil. It's an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. Oh, I'll go. One woman has a secret, same here, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming only on Hulu.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
It's Today Explained. I'm Noel King. Most of the people who work, who do any type of job in Qatar, are not Qatari. They're foreigners who come to the country to earn money. They include every type of employee, from CEOs to construction workers, 2 million people. So when Qatar won the right to host the World Cup and had to build a staggering amount of infrastructure, there was an understanding that migrant workers would do the actual work.
My name is Geoffrey. I am 40 years old. Actually, next month, I'm approaching 40. I'm a Kenyan. Of course, a family man of one wife and three boys.
In Kenya, he works with a charity called Equidem as a labor violations investigator.
Actually, I'm an investigator and a researcher at the same time. That's basically Geoffrey for you.
So in the beginning, Geoffrey's story was not much different than the stories of any of the thousands of people who moved to Qatar for work every year.
In 2018, things were not working well for me, and I lost the job which I was providing for my family. So after thorough soul searching, I decided to go to Qatar.
He paid a recruiter $1,500, a lot more money than he had. He had to take out a loan. He showed his credentials, resume, passport. 8 days later, the deal was done.
And I was airborne to Qatar.
Geoffrey really wanted a job in security, but there were no security jobs. So he ended up working as a technician's assistant in a petrochemical plant. It wasn't complicated work, but it was difficult. His job was to carry the technician's heavy tools, and his days were long.
I was working for 6 days a week, 1 day rest. We usually wake up at 4 o'clock. At exactly 5 a.m., we are picked by the bus. The work site was 1 hour drive, and work started at 6:30. Normal working hours were from 6:30 to 3:30. And of course, there was a standard mandatory overtime of 2 hours. So the normal duty day would end at 5:30. So we will arrive at the accommodation again at 7 in the night.
And for this, he made the equivalent of $470 a month.
But there were a lot of unnecessary deductions of the wages. The weather was taking a toll on us. I feel like I'm running short of breath because of the humidity. If they report you, the entire day's wages is deducted from your monthly salary.
So if a guy worked slowly, he'd lose that day's wages. But if he took a sick day...
They went further even to like deduct 2 days instead of the 1 day you stayed at home because you are feeling uncomfortable. So people would rather go to work so that at least only hours would be deducted than staying at home. They deduct double days.
Joffrey did that job for almost 2 years, and then he got lucky.
Because of scarcity of guys who could speak fluent English and who could write and read, I was reassigned and given responsibilities. And in that process, I came into contact with a lot of procedures, especially on process safety and worker safety. And fortunately, one of the Arabic guys, a friend of mine, an engineer, saw the competence in me. And he actually paid full school fees for me to go and study the occupational and safety and health. So when I left that company, my immediate next job was as a safety officer. First, I worked in a construction site. Then secondly, I worked in Al Janoub Stadium. And finally, I worked in Lusail Stadium. The last job, I was earning around 4,500 Qatar riyals, $1,500. That was pretty good money.
It was a boom time. It was like the entire world had descended on Qatar.
Asians from Bangladesh, India, Philippines, Nepal, Malaysia, Indonesia, Africans from West Africa like Nigeria, Ghana, Uganda, Tanzania, and Kenya, of course.
And there was one very obvious problem for a safety inspector like him.
The problem is that they didn't even know their rights. They didn't even know what is expected. So to convince someone that is being exploited was one of the biggest challenges. For example, it is common knowledge that one person cannot carry a load of over 25 kg. But you find a supervisor forcing someone to carry a 50 kg load alone with the wrong posture, which might even lead to severe back injury or even permanent injuries. So if I tell them, stop, this is wrong. He tells me, no. The boss has said I should do it. So most of this was more of ignorance, though it was direct exploitation.
Did you ever see anyone killed or injured on the job?
Being killed, I've not witnessed, but I've heard of several. But injuries, I've seen so many, so many. I remember one, people working at height. I'm telling these guys, this heat is too much. People are sweaty. The hands are sweaty. Most likely people working at height are going to have slips or falls because of sweat, because even the gloves would not work anymore. I said this, and within minutes we had a guy falling from height. Luckily, it was not fatal, but he broke his leg.
It was things like that. The fact that he'd said, this is dangerous, and then minutes later, a guy pitches off of a building, that made Joffrey increasingly, but very quietly, take up the job of organizing workers.
I became sort of like a leader, and I started creating awareness on the basic minimum rights a worker should expect from the employer. And that is when I started getting into trouble with everybody, because an enlightened citizenry is a threat to leadership. So even my 1 year, 9 months working as a technician helper did not end because I got another job. Actually, they terminated me because they thought I am a bad influence to people, because people were now standing up to exploitation. People were going even to the Ministry of Labor and getting their dues. Almost everybody was like, when they get in trouble with the company, they are going for the disciplinary hearing. I was like the pro bono lawyer. So in the long run, this came to the ears of the company, and they knew, there's a lawyer within the employees. I had now become popular, When I started with one WhatsApp group until they reached 15 WhatsApp groups. And those who had genuine cases which needed legal advice or legal intervention, I was referring them to relevant government agencies. Actually, I was arrested by the government of Qatar.
Oh.
Deported.
Deported. So what are your feelings about Qatar now?
Qatar is a good country. Qatar has provided a lot of employment opportunities to migrant workers from all over the world. My only concern is at what cost? Is it by exploitation? Are they like maximizing on the poverty levels of these countries, especially Asia and Africa? If you compare Qatar with other Gulf nations, it is way better, but it's only better on paper.
You're Kenyan, so I assume you like soccer. Are you going to watch the World Cup?
Actually, my team is Brazil, but the fire in me is not there. Because every time I hear the word World Cup, I try and remember a few serious cases I had seen in Qatar. And I feel like it will be an insult for me to enjoy while there's somebody somewhere who has suffered a permanent injury, or there's a family somewhere mourning their lost one, yet there's nothing for them. I'm trying to imagine my favorite team, Brazil, lifting the World Cup trophy, but workers who have toiled day and night, getting zero compensation. This makes me feel sad, and this makes me feel like I can't watch the World Cup.
Support for Today Explained comes from Mint Mobile, the only cell phone that tastes good. When the deal is too good to be true, there's probably a catch, right? That incredibly cheap flight to Europe? You probably can't bring a bag or pick your seat or use the restroom. So when I tell you that Mint Mobile offers wireless plans for just $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan, you're probably wondering, what's the catch? Well, according to Mint Mobile, there is no catch. According to Mint Mobile, it's only $15 a month, and their plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, you can go to mintmobile.com/explained. That is mintmobile.com/explained. You can cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/explained. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Support for Jay Explained comes from FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. If you like spy thrillers, or indeed Elizabeth Moss, then you might want to check out FX's The Veil. It's an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. Oh, I'll go. One woman has a secret, same here, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming only on Hulu. Today Explained, we're back. Qatar's secrecy makes it impossible to know how many people died building World Cup facilities. Their labor system, the one Joffrey got caught in, is very old. And to explain how it came to be, we called Natasha Iskander, who, like Joffrey, moved to Qatar for work. But she's a professor at NYU. She wrote a book about her research in Qatar called Does Skill Make Us Human? Migrant Workers in 21st Century Qatar and Beyond.
Qatar is kind of this very special node in the world that has always been part of the globalized economy, really for centuries. Long before Qatar became a leader in oil and natural gas production for export, the region has always been the site of global commodity booms. And these global commodity booms have always been constrained by the availability of workers. And so in order to support these workers, people were brought in as workers under many different systems, from enslaved workers in forms of debt bondage and others. Let me just tell you about these global commodity booms and busts. The modern ones started with the pearling industry.
The fruit of countless hours of dangerous and grueling exposure to sun and sea in cramped and difficult conditions.
Pearls were the luxury fashion item that all very wealthy families wanted to display at the turn of the 20th century. And Qatar was the center of pearl harvesting. This was a thoroughly international industry. And labor was brought in from all over the region, primarily as enslaved and debt-bonded workers from East Africa, from what is today Afghanistan and Iran. It was shaped by merchants and middlemen from India and Iran.
The captain holds the pearls until the visit of the Tawash, or pearl broker, from the mainland.
Financiers and commodity traders from Paris and New York.
The pearls are handed over.
And that was a massive pearling boom that went bust just a few decades later when artificial pearl production was developed and Qatar's population collapsed. From around 60,000 in 1920 to something close to 16,000 around 1940.
Now, as never before, the drive for new oil reserves in the Middle East is of vital importance to the great powers.
But then, shortly after World War II, the British, who had been prospecting for oil in the region, negotiated with Qatar for a concession to exploit oil in Qatar.
Up from the desert wells, along the pipelines, and down to the coast, the precious flow of oil brings new benefits to be shared by the peoples of East and West.
And the oil company also faced those same labor constraints and imported workers from all over the world.
Okay, so in the U.S., we would call this a guest worker program. But Qatar has a word for their system, and it's called kafala. Tell me why it's unique.
In its bones, the kafala system is not that different from temporary labor regulation systems around the world. And kafil in Arabic literally translates to sponsor. What distinguished Qatar's kafala system on the day that Qatar won the World Cup hosting rights is that at that time, it was one of the most restrictive systems in the world. It was tantamount to a formal system of bonded labor. Workers who were in Qatar under the kafala system were bound to their sponsor, who was generally their employer. That sponsor could deport the worker at any time for any reason. The worker could not withhold labor for any reason. So the worker could not stop working, even in cases of wage theft, dangerous conditions, physical abuse. The worker was also not able to quit. They could also not change jobs. There were no minimum wage protections, no right to organize, no worker voice or representation, and the worker also could not leave the country at will. The worker required an exit visa to leave the country, and that exit visa had to be authorized by the sponsor in conjunction with the government. So even if you decided as a worker, I've had enough, I want to go home, you couldn't actually leave. You needed an exit visa. And once you went home, you couldn't return to Qatar to take another job if you so desired, unless you got the permission and assent from your prior employer.
How long was this system in place?
In its modern iteration, it was in place starting in the early 2000s and actually became more restrictive as Qatar needed more labor. It started undergoing a series of reforms, actually thanks to the global campaign against some of the worst aspects of this kafala system. And then in 2017, there was a complaint filed with the International Labour Organization that Qatar was abetting modern slavery. And so Qatar very quickly formed a partnership with the ILO and, under the tutelage of the ILO, instituted a series of reforms that were quite remarkable and quite fast.
What were they?
Under those reforms, Qatar put in place a wage protection system to try and track who was not paying workers. It abolished the exit visa for most classes of workers, so now workers can leave the country at will. It established a minimum wage of $275 a month, still very low. Workers now have the ability to quit their jobs, and they have the ability to change jobs if they so desire. These reforms look very good on paper. But what I will say is that in practice, the labor relations in Qatar have not changed that meaningfully from when the kafala system existed under its previous iteration. Even the ILO will concede this. The workers find it very difficult to change jobs, almost impossible. They face retaliation. Employers will report them for absconding. They face potential detention. The additional feature here is that it exists in a universe of other regulations. And the most stringent of these is a system of physical segregation. So most of the construction workers in Qatar, for example, live in an area outside of Doha called the industrial area, which is a place for labor camps, cement factories, equipment storage. It's grim, it's isolated, and it is policed. And workers cannot actually travel through the city at will. They face the prospect of detention and deportation if they do so. So imagine trying to find another job on your one day off when you can't actually move through the city at will.
So a migrant worker named Joffrey tells us he was deported for organizing. Does that track with what you heard happens?
Yes, absolutely. It's totally expected. Any kind of labor organizing in Qatar is prohibited. But one of the things that I found really striking, Noel, was that I saw strikes, wildcat spontaneous strikes, at every single site I was on. And the surprising thing for me was that employers tolerated these strikes as long as they stayed within certain limits. So let me tell you what those limits are. They had to be short, you know, a day or two. And when workers struck, they had to do it in their labor camps. No protests or challenges were tolerated on site. And the protest had to be limited to one nationality.
Wait, why only one nationality? So like Bangladeshi workers could strike, but if a Kenyan like Joffrey slipped in there, we'd have a problem.
Yes, exactly. Because if workers organized across nationality, it meant that workers were no longer blowing off steam as Bangladeshis or Nepalis or Egyptians who just needed a day to kind of get their heads back. But rather, they were organizing as workers with a class consciousness. And those protests were immediately disappeared through deportation.
That is absolutely wild. And so what's going to happen to all of those workers who moved to Qatar to build the stadiums and the metro and the new buildings? What happens now?
So if Qatar imagines itself as kind of hosting these games and then closing up shop, then you can imagine workers being sent home. But that is not Qatar's ambition. Qatar's ambition is to position itself as a global destination for sports and culture and as an important political node. And to do that, it will need to continue to build and continue to maintain the buildings it has built. So it will need a workforce, possibly slightly smaller, but it will need a workforce in construction for the foreseeable future.
Everything you've told me to this point suggests that if Qatar does want to become a global destination, a London or a Tokyo or a Delhi, some of this stuff is just going to have to change. It's not going to fly, right, over time?
I think how much it continues to change will depend very much on how vital these global conversations remain. And I mean that with respect to Qatar, but also with respect to other places around the world. I mean, one of the most encouraging things about this cup to me, as someone who has cared about working conditions for migrant and immigrant workers for a very long time, is that we are finally having really high-profile conversations about what is fair, what is just. If we could continue to have those conversations in relation, for example, to the World Cup that will be held in North America in 2026, it would be a powerful political move and statement by the global community if we could say, just like we asked Qatar to reform its regulatory system vis-a-vis migrant workers, we are going to ask the US and Canada, or anywhere else we hold a global event, to do the same.
Today's show was produced by Halima Shah and edited by Amina El-Sadi. It was engineered by Afim Shapiro and fact-checked by Laura Bullard and Matthew Collette. I'm Noelle King. It's Today Explained.